A character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Shapes of things before my eyes. Just teach me to despise. Will time make man more wise? Here, within my lower brain, my eyes just hurt my brain. But will it seem the same? Come tomorrow, will I be older? Come tomorrow, may be a soldier. Come tomorrow, may I be bolder than today.
Oh my God, we're back once again. Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stunt Granny TNA Audio, this time focusing on the February 16th edition of TNA Impact Wrestling, whatever the hell they want to call it, show. Every Thursday night, I am your host, your lovely and talented and beautiful host, Dusty. This person here sitting next to me in our studio, that's real, we're really in a studio. His name is Matt. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. I am the younger, maybe slightly better-looking co-host now that the other guy next to me turned a year older. Happy birthday, Dusty, a couple days late.
Thank you. It's nice this edition of Impact Wrestling was on my birthday. And, oh, what a birthday gift it was. But we'll get into that in just a minute here. Yes, there was cake. Yes, there were... topless women jumping out of the cake. It was a celebration beyond repair. So, happy birthday.
Yes, Dusty got his Under Siege movie, Wet Dream. Girl jumps through the cake. Everybody remembers, well, if you're our age, being like 10 years old watching that rated R movie. It was the greatest thing ever.
Yes, it's a really good movie. In the upper tier of my favorite movies, so thumbs up to that.
It's Steven Seagal's best work since the Mountain Dew commercial.
Indeed, indeed. Or teaching MMA wrestlers how to kick.
So, kick that bag. Yeah.
All right, well, before we get started here, we have Ask a Random Question, a hit segment sweeping the nation. My random question to you is, you were watching Jim Cornette and Bill Watts shoot interview before we went on the air. You learned something?
Oh, I learned a lot. Good stuff. They basically went from Cowboy's early career from the 70s all the way up through, at the point I pushed stop on, they were... talking about the Mid-South territory, so talking about how they could sell out, you know, twice a week in the same town. So always neat to hear about how they could keep the fans coming and how they had to structure things, especially Jim Cornette goes on about how TV aired in different days in different towns, so you had to keep track of, did this air yet, or, you know, promo can I cut? Because maybe they hadn't actually seen it yet, even though you only went, you know, 3 hours down the road. But if the TV was different, they might not have got that the newest week yet. So very cool.
Like Advanced Algebra running that wrestling company. But TNA has found a way to get fans into the building too. Let them in for free.
Yes, it's they're failing at calculus. Well, it looks like they seem like they're trying to do calculus and failing miserably.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, do you have a question for me on my birthday, even though it's not really my birthday anymore?
Yeah, what is the coolest wrestling related gift you received on your birthday in your 30-ish years of life?
Oh my God. Well, I believe it was a birthday gift, getting that Tatanka shirt I had. that I probably wore for school picture day that year, 1994, right after he turned heel. Probably wore that shirt. I believe that was a birthday gift. So I will say that that was my favorite wrestling-related birthday present.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. How about you?
You know, I can't think of, like, getting a wrestling thing for my birthday. I mean, I've gotten different things, but I can't say I definitely got this for a birthday, so I'm kind of stuck. And my birthday's right close to Christmas, so they kind of overlap, so.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I got Starrcade 97 for my birthday, ordered it, so that turned out to be a disappointment at the end of the night.
Oh, one of the best pay-per-views of all time, I believe. That's a good birthday present.
It should have been one of the best pay-per-views of all time.
Oh, wait, did they fail with that? I don't remember.
Nick
wait,
Patrick
that was a total failure, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, Nick Patrick still owes me $30.
You could see the $100 bill flying out of his pocket, dude. Well, moving along here, we're talking, like I said before, about the February 16th edition of Impact. This show started off with a video recap of Against All Odds pay-per-view. The first thing they showed us was Garrett Bischoff being resilient and tough and never backing down, even though he got his butt kicked. They showed that first because he's the biggest star in wrestling. And then they showed the main event, which ended with Bobby Roode retaining his title once again through chicanery. Ducked as Sting swung the belt at him. Sting accidentally hit the opponent. Jeff Hardy causing Bobby Roode to get the pin. Shades of Shawn Michaels, 1997. And then Christy Hemme introduces Roode as he saunters to the ring. Roode grabs the mic and makes Hemme introduce him again, which was funny. Let's see. Said that he bet the fans didn't expect him to still have the belt at this point. But again, he finds a way to keep the belt against all kinds of adversity. The fans chant for Hardy during all of this. He said he retained the belt against all odds. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And then moves on to discussing Sting. Said Sting has been trying to get him to lose the belt for months now, but he's been unable to get the job done. So he said now Sting is the one to blame since he single-handedly caused Roode to keep the title at the pay-per-view. Of course, this brings out Sting, and he's wearing a jean jacket this time around with a black shirt underneath. Casual Sting, I would say.
Yeah. Always the fashion aficionado, rocking the sunglasses, keeping the bald spot slicked back. Even though camera decided to zoom in on it later in the night, hey, let's show how old Sting is. Thanks.
They got right in on the bald spot. I'm glad you noticed that. But go ahead.
Sting comes out, he talks to Bobby Roode. They don't do any caveman talk this time, always a plus. Announces a world title match, no count out, no DQ, and he's leaving, his music hits, and he's going up the ramp, and he's like, oh wait, glad you got your gear on. It starts after the break. Now, if you're Bobby Roode, why are you wearing your gear anyway? Like it.
Yes, that bugs me.
I mean, I get sometimes, but if you're the champ, you should never like think you're wrestling. You should never think you're wrestling unless you're scheduled ahead of time. And if they
every other week.
Every other week he comes out in a suit. Just so happens he has a match, so he's ready to go. Like they did it with Angle a couple weeks ago. Where he didn't have his stuff on, and then he's like, you better go get dressed quick. So they could have done something like that, but it just seemed all too convenient when he usually comes out in a suit.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That bothered me. I was like, what a kind gesture of Roode to wear the wrestling gear just in case. You know, always come prepared, I guess. Even though every other week he isn't. Prepared. So anyway, they go right into the match, and the match is about 16-17 minutes. Lots of chair shots, another hardcore chicanery, because it is no disqualification, no count out. Lots of brawling around the ring and such. However, the match ends with Rude winning once again. I thought this was a really good match, actually. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I like the match. It's amazing how this singles match for the title was longer than the pay-per-view main event. I guess not surprising.
Yep.
Jeff Hardy did the old, he had the half face paint with hot pink. He did the, his new thing now is he draws eyes on his eyelids. So if it ever happens like last year and he passes out in the ring or blacks out for a little bit, everybody still thinks he's awake. They can just, you know, lean back in the corner.
Right,
he,
like Homer Simpson serving jury duty.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also noticed for the first time, they sell aluminum beer bottles at the Impact Zone. Now, we've seen those Impact Zone fans, and I would not be giving them anything besides a plastic cup. Somebody's going to get killed one of these days.
Mm-hmm. More than likely, they'll find a way to kill themselves with the cup. So.
Yeah, probably
that's
during an Eric Young match.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. We'll get to Eric Young. Let me press the pause button on him. We'll get to him. But, what struck me about this match was it was all Hardy for about 15 minutes. And then Rude wins out of nowhere. I guess trying to establish him still as the lucky champion, but that kind of fell a little flat. I felt like he should have done a little bit more leading up to the pin. Of course, Angle interfering was probably the equalizer there, probably why they felt Rude could just swoop in and get the win. So I guess that's that. They gave it more time than the pay-per-view, and it was a better match than the pay-per-view match. And they simply just care more about television than they do pay-per-view, and they're not going to get over that, no matter how much it bothers them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it drives me completely insane. Like, I guess, why have something like that in the middle that you're supposed to pay for? If you don't, I mean, people can be buying this. They do it month after month. So why not just eat the money and not actually have to put on a show, which drops your production costs and pay whatever fine or whatever you have to pay the pay-per-view companies just to not air it. They could add another week of TV, which means they could stretch it out. And if they wanted to have a couple pay-per-views a year, then they could. But having these so-called B shows and then putting on mediocre stuff and then actually coming, you know, it's bad enough if you have a bad show. But when you come back after every pay-per-view and do the TV match that everybody would rather see, was it last time that they did a... or was it two pay-per-views ago, they did the same thing when they had the Rude AJ match. They had the crap finish on the pay-per-view, and then they actually had they had the match later the next night. So it just drives me insane. Yeah. And another thing, why is Robert Roode using the spear now, and why did he get rid of the Perfect Plex? That's, Mr. Perfect was a heel, so it's not like all babyface moves.
He's got an identity crisis. He has no idea what his finisher is. I like the Perfect Plex better, quite frankly, for him as a finisher.
Well, is it because Edge retired, so it's open now? Is that their deal? They're like, oh, I can use it now.
I don't know. Maybe they're going to bring Edge in for a title shot later in the year. I have no idea.
Yeah, they're both Canadian, I guess.
I don't know. Very confused. Lack of direction there, especially for your world champion. I can see doing that with a mid-card guy, kind of, you know, changing it around until you find one that sticks, but this is your world champion. You need to pick something and stick with it. And if it's his fault, shame on him, you know?
Yes, and he also has a new nickname. He is he's not the leader of the Shellfish Generation.
Nope.
He is. He's now the It Factor, Bobby Roode. So it's close to, maybe they could bring in Uncle Cracker to sing It Factor instead and warm all their hearts.
Oh, God. I forgot about Uncle Cracker until you mentioned him. Oh, no. That's something TFA would do, too. He's the level of person they'd bring in. So, looking forward to that, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah, well, oh, and another thing, they pointed out two guys in the crowd in this match. One was Brandon Jacobs, the douchebag running back for the Giants. I call him a douchebag because he's a loudmouth. When he has a bad game, it's not his fault, and when he has a good game, look at me. And then there's some other MMA douchebag that we'll get to later. So, yeah, they make quite a pair.
And they promoted the MMA douchebag almost more than the running back douchebag.
Well, they both got their time later. They promoted their running back better than their number one contender, we'll just say later.
Yep. Okay, so after the match, Rude cuts a promo. He's the Hit Factor. Jeff Hardy's run out of chances. Yeah, okay. Says Sting keeps trying to stack the deck against him, but he's the most dominant champion of all time. So, of course, Sting shows up. Says Rude keeps trying to beat the system. Sting says there will be a number one contenders match later in the show to determine Rude's next contender. Rude doing a good job throughout the show of snapping. You can see it coming, you know? He's getting more and more frustrated with Sting's antics against him. So I have to give him credit for that. Good acting in a world where good acting doesn't usually exist.
Yeah,
and then we go to something else that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we go to one of your two favorite segments of the show.
Nope. I'm just completely zoning out during this. You can go ahead.
Oh, God. Oh, fine, I'll talk about everybody, what everybody wants to hear about. Eric Young with his guitar backstage. I'm talking to the cameraman. He missed Valentine's Day with ODB. He's going to make that up for her later on in the show. Got my guitar here. I got to find her. Miss Valentine's Day. And then we go to Sting talking to the air, just talking. Cameraman's got the camera on him. He's talking. Nobody's around. Number one contender match. Oh, wait. Camera pans to the left. We get the Bully Ray and the James Storm. And they say, oh, you know, I won last night. No, I won last night. If Sting would have counted a pin, anybody besides Rude would have won last night. But they talk some crap to each other, really get in each other's faces, and they are in the match later on for the number one contender.
Sounds good to me. Logical booking there. Everything makes sense. And then we come back from the commercial break with W.C. Fields narrating a video package talking about Jesse Sorensen's neck injury and said that TNA will keep fans abreast of the situation. Got to say, Zima Ion handled that perfectly, staying in character just enough and, not doing anything more to him. That was kind of the perfect way to handle that injury situation. Just a freak accident. It could happen during any match.
Oh, yeah. And I thought the one thing mm-hmm. that people talk about, they're like, oh, well, he didn't move him. I'm like, well, I guess I figured the spot in the match, even if he doesn't hurt him, was probably him to roll, get in the ring and try to get the cheap count out. So, he hits the move and he rolls in, and luckily the ref checks him out, and, he doesn't go after him anymore. So, yeah, freak thing. Hopefully TNA steps up and pays this guy's medical bills, but I just have a feeling they're going to be taking, 15% out of his paycheck for the next, 10 years while they keep him under contract to make sure they get all that money back like they do to everybody else, so.
Well, this leads to Austin Aries and Zima Ion beating Alex Shelley and Shannon Moore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think I said anything. Heels can't get along in this one, as usual. Although it actually made sense that these two couldn't get along because we have the champ and the number one contender on the same team, and then we have Alex Shelley and everybody's favorite go away guy, Shannon Moore. Shannon Moore can wrestle, but he looks like somebody you don't ever want to see in public ever. So yep. Heels one up each other. Moore gets a hot tag, runs wild.
Mm-hmm.
Funny, best part of the match, and I don't remember who it was, but grabbed the hairspray, Zima Ion takes him out, and then says, "I don't think so, that's my hairspray." And then and then uses it. Just great. I wish he had arrogance written on the side of the can. But.
Oh, my God, that'd be brilliant. I thought throughout this match, Aries and Ion did an excellent job of trying to one-up each other. They're both cut from the same cloth, character-wise. They're not the same character, not like Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho. But, you know, kind of cut from that same cloth anyway, and I thought it was excellent, the interaction between the two. Ion keeps looking better and better to me each week. He really has breakout potential. Dare I say, he could be The Rock if he got a little more serious. If he can kick into that higher gear and get serious, he could be The Rock someday. So...
He doesn't remind you of a young Lightning Kid.
I don't even know who that is or who would say such a thing, and I'm not even going to acknowledge that. Anyway.
All right. Yeah, finish Zima Ion, blind tags in, and then rolls up Shelley for the pin, in which Alex Shelley, our heroic baby face, pisses and moans about getting rolled up fair and square, of course.
Yeah,
and the baby faces are like mad, and then they leave. Then they just like walk away and leave the ring. But yeah, he throws a fit when he got rolled up. And he didn't even grab the tights.
About it there, bud. So.
Yeah, he doesn't even grab the tights. He just rolls him up fair and square. So yeah, good stuff.
Ion shoots him away. Like, what are you going to do about it? Very good there. And then backstage, we see Gail Kim and Madison Rayne. It just occurred to me, the comparison I can make to those two, they're like in the cartoon Daria, the Fashion Club girls, Madison Rayne being the leader of the Fashion Club, and Gail Kim being the Asian girl that talks like this. So, that's that. They're talking backstage about their, oh, they had a little problems, but it's nothing, you know. That's all water under the bridge, and now they're going to have a battle royal to determine the number one contender because Gail Kim is just that giving, just that caring of a person. So then we go to a commercial break and come back with a recap of the title match from earlier and hyping up the number one contenders match for later in the show. And then the Fashion Club comes back out. This match, the Battle Royal, begins with Madison Rayne cutting a promo in mid-ring. Foreshadowing, folks. Anyone in the ring right now could become the number one contender. Remember that. That's clever foreshadowing. So then we go to Madison Rayne stepping out of the ring as the Battle Royal starts. And the Battle Royal ends with Madison Rayne coming back in to win the Battle Royal. Your thoughts on this?
You know, they did something similar. God, it's been a long time. I know it was during the main event Mafia run. And they pulled the same women's Battle Royal, and I think it was like whoever wins gets in the Mafia. And in that one, they did Tracy Brooks, the one person who wasn't in the match. She was like the referee. In the ring during the Battle Royal, she had the referee shirt on, and then she dumps over the last person to get the win. So kind of like this worked. Order of elimination, if anyone cares, we got Winter out first, then Angelina, then Mickie James because she dared laugh at Garrett Bischoff.
Yep.
And then we had Tess Mocker, Rosita. ODB's gone. Tara, it broke down into like final three with Velvet, Angelita, and Sarita. I think I messed it up. Best part of the match for me was Tess said, ODB is built like a small man, which Tanay tried to babble on about how no man looks like
There's
ODB.
There's nothing small about her, Taz.
Yeah, so it turns into like a little three-way for a few minutes. Sarita
about solidly
ends up
behind
with...
Velvet Sky. God bless Velvet Sky. She is over, but she can't wrestle a lick, man. Holy cow, is she terrible.
Oh, she's all she's all kinds of awful. Ends up Sarita and Velvet are the last two in the ring. Velvet throws over Sarita, and then she gets flipped over by Madison Rain, which I actually wish she would have been like celebrating, like for a minute, like standing on the middle rope doing the Davey Boy Smith, and then Madison Rain could come in. Of course, she couldn't take that bump, but you know, just something like that where she's on the rope celebrating and gets flipped like for a minute.
Sure. I thought Sarita showed me a lot in this match. Showed a lot of personality, a lot of charisma. Good talent. I hope they get behind Sarita more in the future. That was my biggest takeaway of this.
Yeah, that and her, like, her banana outfit.
What's that?
I said, yes, that and her bright banana-colored outfit was,
Oh, God,
was
that was horrible.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what they do with the Mexican girls now that, they've sent Anarchy to OVW. I don't know if those guys, like, who go down there get to come back very often or what, but we haven't really seen them in the last couple months, so.
Well, they're taking care of business, man. You know, wherever they are, they're handling something. But, you know, I like to call Gunner pocket-sized Gunner, but I think Rosita could fit in his pocket, you know?
Yeah, it'd be
it's
one
like
of those... nesting doll. There we go.
Rosita is in Gunner's pocket, who's in Eric Bischoff's pocket. How about
and
that?
Who Samoa Joe ate all of them.
Nice. Oh. So, we go backstage to James Stone talking about his number one contenders match. This was excellent. It was quick. It wasn't a long promo or anything, but I thought it was really good. He showed a lot of fire, a lot of drive and determination. I thought this was excellent. And then we go elsewhere backstage, because backstage is a very spacious area. Lots of wrestlers occupying lots of space. Gunner and Eric Bischoff strolling through the locker room area, heading out to the ring soon. It'll be a long walk, though. There's several things before they get to the ring. Including, speaking of Joe and Magnus cutting a quick promo about how they're the best tag team in the world right now, won the belts at the pay-per-view. They've got a rematch against Morgan and Crimson next week. You know what bothers me? I'm just now reminded of something that bothers me. These wrestlers are cutting a promo ostensibly to Jason Hervey. It always seems, every time, like they've wrapped up their promo, and Jason Hervey always asks one more question. I can't fucking stand that. It, like, kills the momentum of the promo. They're done, they hit their, you know, cliche catchphrase or whatever, they're done, they're posing, and then Jason Hervey's like, well, what the fuck about this thing? And it just kills everything then.
But why? Well, see, it's realer that way, Dusty, because there's always annoying people with cameras walking around asking you questions. What
there
I liked
are.
About this was they actually looked like a team. They had some matching backwards baseball caps, so kind of fitting in. Zip up jackets, and of course, when they get to the ring, well, they are not going to look anything alike. But
sure.
Samoa Joe wearing his boxer briefs or whatever they are. I don't know if there's anything he could wear that can make him look good in the ring, but it's...
But I have to say this whole push has really done him well, you know. He seems much more interested and focused than he has been in a long time. A focused Joe is a better wrestler, so... Thank God they're getting more out of him. He had a lot of wasted potential for a long time there. So, hopefully Joe and Magnus can bring the best out in each other, because Magnus is another one I think that's right on the cusp of something better.
Yeah, they need to bring the best out of each other, because Crimson and Morgan bring the best out of nobody. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Crimson doesn't have the best of anything.
Audio insurance.
The only thing
he's the best at
is being able to leave. He could leave anytime he wants to. Yeah. He could go somewhere else, so I don't have to watch him wrestle every week. That would be awesome. And then let Matt Morgan do something useful.
He's got the best family plan car insurance in TNA, though.
In case you're interested, it's directgeneral.com for all your insurance needs. So then we go to a video package, hyping up Gary Bischoff again. That's two segments for him, and he's not even on the show. Awesome. And then we see Eric Bischoff, Gunner, and Ric Flair coming down to the ring with guess who? No, I'm serious. Guess who? Because I have no idea who this person is.
You have no idea who this person was?
Apparently returning.
Oh, yeah. This was Chelsea, who was with... Desmond Wolfe, aka Nigel McGuinness, during his
okay.
She was, and then when him and Magnus were a tag team, she was with them. Right away I was like, I know that was her, and then I was like, well, maybe it isn't. So apparently, according to Eric Bischoff, Chelsea reached out to him after the pay per view. Why?
Yep.
No explanation. So and she's not with Gunner. So she, she doesn't date losers, I guess. She's with, she's one of Ric Flair's Orlando regulars. She's not the first on Space Mountain, but she was the next.
Yep.
And they come out, they got Bischoff blabs on about what happened at the pay-per-view. He gets cigars and champagne from SoCal Val, so we got our SoCal Val appearance. The first of two tonight. And, of course, since it is such a popular saying now in that company that's actually making money, we got a good luck to you in your future endeavors for Garrett.
Chelsea serving the purpose of bringing each man cigars and glasses of champagne. I love the contrast, by the way. The heels drink champagne, the baby faces drink beer and moonshine. In case you're keeping track at home. I do remember Nigel McGuinness with Chelsea now. That was back when I'd watch TNA once every couple of months. I remember watching a Nigel match, Becky coming in, and looking at the screen and saying, who is that girl? She's on drugs. So that is all I know about Chelsea. Eric Bischoff with his empty cliches and same old bag of tricks that he ever had. People like to knock Vince Russo for having the same bag of tricks, but Eric Bischoff's is just as old and tired as Russo's. So fuck that guy. I hope he dies. Mm-hmm.
There's just less in the bag with Eric Bischoff. He's got a bag that with about three ideas in it compared to Russo's 100, 90 that don't work.
But he loves you because he loves each and every one of us. So
yes,
just keep that in mind.
I'm tapping my heart right now.
Indeed. I'm pointing at somebody who's not cheering me, but I'm pretending they are. Backstage, we get Bully Ray promo. Said he should be the TNA champion right now. And he has no problem going through Storm to get another shot at his dear close personal longtime friend, Bobby Roode. Another great promo. This is more of what I want to see, WWE. What you could have done instead of having a stupid fucking debate for 20 fucking minutes to start Raw. Jesus fucking Christ. In any event, Chrissy Henry makes her way. Mm-hmm.
Wait, you missed the best part of the promo. Bully Ray saying, the best calves in the business. That's why they call me Cavzilla. Now show my calves again.
Because every Bully Ray promo has to start and end with a close-up of those calves.
That's it. He's the new Scott Steiner. Instead of the bicep flex, we're getting the calf flex. So
you know,
I guess
it occurred to me.
I was gonna say, if that's all, if that's the one thing you got going for you, I guess you should accentuate it. So what did occur?
Oh yeah,
to
you got
to
milk that cow for all it's worth. It occurred to me watching that promo that ECW has a long line of fat wrestlers with good calves, because Axel Rotten's calves were very good too back in the day. Never made a big deal out of them, but they were strong-looking calves on an otherwise fat, bland body. So,
well, when you work the drive-through, you got to be on. When you work the Taco Bell drive-through, you got to be on your feet all the time. Oh, that's Ian. Sorry.
That's Ian. Well, I can't tell if that's Rotten's apart anyway.
Sorry, Axel.
Axel was a cab driver at one time. So, to me, that's a much more noble profession. Getting people where they need to be is a lot more noble than serving me my fucking volcano burrito. So, anyway. So, yeah, Christy Hemme walks from ringside to backstage to interview whatever the fuck this guy's name was. He's apparently the host of the MMA Uncensored show, which is coming up on Spike TV. Like I said, up to this point, he got more hype than the star running back of the Super Bowl champions, so I don't know what the hell was all that about.
Yeah, and I'm guessing they had to do this with the whole Hemi backstage with him, because he couldn't do it in one take standing next to the guardrail, which should have been done. If you're sitting there outside, he had no reason to go to the back. Just interview him, Donald Trump at WrestleMania style. What's going on, sir?
Yeah. That's good. I like that. And then something else happened on the show.
Oh,
involving people. Yep.
It was the Ode to ODB segment. EY strummed this song to the tune of Horse with No Name, which is what I thought it was anyway.
Very
feels
good.
Good
that
to
was
be
my
out,
first
feels
song.
Good to be out of the rain, yeah. I thought about transcribing this, but I knew I wouldn't get those 10 minutes of my life back. So he goes on and on. He makes some fart jokes, some boob jokes. She sits in the chair, laughs at him. How do you like it when she gets done? When he gets done, she gives him the ass slap and drags him off for some nasty, dirty sex, I'm sure. So
yeah.
it was a hit.
This is my ODE to ODB. That's all you need to know. Mm-hmm. That is literally all you need to know. So then quickly moving along to James Storm beating Bully Ray to become the number one contender to Bobby Roode's title. This match took 10 or 11 minutes or something. Who am I, Johnny Stopwatch? If you want to know the fucking times, ask the Green Lantern fan. I don't know what the fuck time it took. It was about 10 minutes. Most of the match consists of Bully Ray working on Storm's leg. His heavily tattooed leg, I might add. Pulls the boot off, pulls the sock off, and he's working away methodically. On the leg, the announcer's speculating that the reason for this is to prevent against the old HBK super kick. Ironically, he just uses the other leg. Bully Ray didn't count on him having two legs, I guess. So,
well, he thought all the super kick power was derived from that awful tattoo on that left leg. If I was James Storm and I had that tattoo on taking up from the knee down, I know wrestlers say you need to work the left side of whatever body part you're working on. They should have worked on the right leg. Unless he's got a matching tattoo of beer drinking, chain smoking, rowdy friend stuff.
Chain smoking? Is that one of the lyrics? I know he's moonshine swilling, beer drinking, Johnny Cash listening. So,
well, he's from Tennessee, right? He goes to bars. I don't know.
He's from Leopardsport, Tennessee.
Yeah,
so.
they don't enforce the smoking ban in Leaper Sport.
No, I guarantee you they don't.
Yeah, they hey, we saw Kurt Angle there, and he brought a concealed weapon, so with his fake gun that day. This match, when you said earlier in the Jeff Hardy Rube match, this was basically the opposite. So instead of the babyface getting offense for 90% of the match, Bully Ray took over, probably 90%. Storm got the first 9%, the first 2 minutes of the match, which actually I like because that brings me back to the old early 90s WCW where Arn Anderson, that those TV title matches would cheat a little bit, give an eye poke, and then go to town on that leg or go to town on that arm, and we'd get some leg whips and some arm drags and some arm bars on young Dustin Rhodes. So Bully Ray did that, just beat the crap out of his leg. And, he just so happened he had another spare leg with him that he kicks, he fires up for about 30 seconds. So it wasn't completely out of nowhere. He got a little offense in on Bully Ray, got the momentum, and then a quick super kick, got the pin. And I was actually happy there wasn't a kick out because I was waiting for the, you know, you need three super kicks to finish him. And why was this the main event and we didn't get a main event in-ring introductions?
I don't have a good answer for that, but I do agree with all your other points there. The match was structured much more to my liking. I grew up with heel dominates the middle portion of the match kind of thing. Babyface is resilient and comes from behind to win because that's what fans can rally behind. Kind of a mirror image of the first match, and I kind of liked it better, actually. Even though it wasn't technically really that good of a match, it was slow-paced. It told the story, you know? Tell me a story, and I'm happy, you know? I want larger-than-life personalities, and I want good stories. So it hit the notes there, I believe.
Yeah, this was my favorite match, too. I liked it better than Hardy and Storm for whatever reason. I guess I can't pinpoint it, but if I had to pick two or one of the two, it was definitely that one, and it wasn't the Battle Royal. So after the match, Storm celebrates. SoCal Val gives him his beer, which he gives her another cameo by basically saying open up, and he poured it from the top rope into her mouth and made sure he missed on purpose, I'm sure. He celebrates with Brandon Jacobs for some reason because they're buddies, even though I don't think they said it until that point. We get a Bully Ray blindside on Storm, and Brandon Jacobs gets in his face, where's your ring, punk? Where's your ring? Because if you win the Super Bowl, you need to get that ring right away or you're not the champ. So,
Right.
Yeah. So Bully Ray spits beer in Jacobs' face. Apparently that he turns into the Incredible Hulk because he gives him one push, and Bully Ray
that's
thinks
exactly word for word what I have in my notes. He turned into the Incredible Hulk. So
he goes, oh man, the crowd goes ooh. He gives him one Bully Ray a push down. Bully Ray acts like he's seen the ghost of D-Von or Big Dick Dudley or somebody. Scurries off. Scurries off. Good, but it was a good thing that the TNA, according to Mike Tenay, fortunately for Bully Ray, security restrained Jacobs was an actual quote.
Yes.
So good thing he was there. Bully Ray, your number one or number two heel in the whole company, would have got torn apart by this guy because he's a football player and he's a star and your guys aren't. So luckily for him, D'Lo Brown was there, so D'Lo got him to recognize.
Snow.
Yeah.
Super sensational Al Snow. Always a pleasure to see that piece of fucking shit on my television. D'Lo, Jeremy's favorite, Whoopi, doing a great job of holding back Jacobs. Yeah, God bless TNA. Always willing to put the big name other athlete over your top wrestler. If this ends with Jacobs pinning Bully Ray clean, I mean, yeah, okay.
It did wonders for Bam Bam Bigelow.
Mm-hmm, it sure did. By the way, that's the perfect comparison because Lawrence Taylor was only Diesel's friend, like, after the angle happened. He was just there as a guest of Diesel's, you know? Okay.
Yeah, it was, I just couldn't believe they were like, you know, that they actually said, you know, luckily for Bully Ray, security was there, you know, this guy would have ripped him limb from limb.
Like the top bad guy wrestler. Thank God he was protected. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they at least could have had Bully Ray kind of try to get back after him and restrain him, too. I mean, he's, you know, he talks tough, so as soon as Jacobs was restrained, he should have been trying to get at him.
Or fucking run away because you're a heel, and that saves the embarrassment of having the awkward hold him back thing, you know?
Right. Or spit on him because that's TNA's thing is everybody gets spit on, so that was perfect timing for that.
Oh, there's a lot of spittle going around in this company. For
sure. He could have missed and hit Al Snow and got the one pop of the night because everybody knows Al Snow's take on everything.
Yeah.
But he's an idiot.
Back from break, Jacobs and Storm celebrate the victory. Jacobs cuts an Incredible Hulk promo about, you know, what he's going to do to Bully Ray. And Storm's just happy about the win or whatever. This was another one where they seem to finish the interview and then Hervey asked another question or two. Always drives me crazy. And to be honest, that could have been the finish of the show, but then they had a little bit more, and it was kind of anticlimactic, to be honest with you.
Okay, why did they, I thought... It was like when they were interviewing Jacobs backstage, he knew he had a match next week against Bully Ray. That happened right after. Who booked the match in 2 minutes? It wasn't Sting, so how did they know they were wrestling like 2 minutes after the pull apart?
I gotta believe this is another case where Sting gave them carte blanche to book their own thing like he gave to Hogan last week. And I don't know.
That's as good as we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely.
The devil?
Yeah, all about Jacobs, nothing about Storm. So, yep, and then speaking of Sting, goes to the ring.
Well, what's more important, Matt? The World Heavyweight title or this football guy that just came in this week? What are your priorities, Matt? Think about it.
Well, I'd rather have the other running back, but he wasn't available.
No. Speak of the devil, Sting comes out to the ring and he calls out Bobby Roode. Roode makes his way to the ring. They were already scraping it on time, and Roode takes like 2-3 minutes to get to the ring with his typical slow entrance. Sting makes the announcement that Roode will take on Storm at Lockdown in a steel cage match for the heavyweight title. Roode finally completely snaps on Sting and kicks him in the crotch, kicks him while he's down, celebrates by putting on Sting's sunglasses, and then blasts Sting with the championship. Sting bleeds. Roode stands triumphantly over him, tells him to mind his own business. And then there was the piped-in crowd heat, very obvious this time around. As the show went off the air, your thoughts on this angle?
I liked it that he got pushed over the edge. Nutshot is like the worst thing ever, so like that's the biggest heel move you can do. What is the cage matches? Is that the next pay per view? Because we're getting we're getting Roode versus Storm. So we're getting Sting versus Roode before that, which you know Sting's going to beat him. He just beat him last week in the tag match. So that's really going to help your champion. And so we're going to get Hardy and Angle, which makes sense. And then Bully Ray and and your favorite running back are going to be on next week. But where does, I guess, are we going to get Sting, Bully Ray at the pay-per-view, since those two would be the odd men out, or is Sting going to be the enforcer, or...
Well,
I guess I'm just trying to figure out, I guess it doesn't matter for the pay-per-view, because the pay-per-view is kind of a joke, but where are they going with, in like, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, next week's show is more important, Matt. Get it straight. But my thought was Abyss has to come back at some point, right? So he causes Bully Ray to lose and they set up the match that way? That's my thought.
Yeah, is he, did they mention him this week? I didn't catch it. I guess.
They've been mentioning him since then.
So he should come out next week in a Giants jersey? Okay.
That would be my vote. Overall thoughts on the show? I enjoyed this show quite a bit, actually. I thought it flowed from one segment to the next. I think some shows TNA does are pretty clunky, and this one flowed really well. Had a storyline consistent throughout the show of Root snapping on Sting. The matches were mostly meaningful, even though they might not have been all that great. A couple of them were pretty good. Telling good stories, setting up future matches. We got Gail Kim versus Madison Rayne coming up. We got Aries versus Zema Ion coming up. Overall thumbs up. I'd say this was about a 7.5 out of 10. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that high. I did like, well, the Battle Royal's awful, and it's always going to be with 10 women. But I liked the tag match. I liked the two main event matches, if you want to say, with those guys. They really pulled their weight. When you have Garrett Bischoff recaps on the show twice, that really drags it. Because you know, since he wasn't on this week, he's going to be all over next week. You have that going. I mean, that's the one. If you take that out of the show, and I don't know what you replace it with, but you know, if you take those 15 minutes out of the show, we didn't get anything with AJ and Kaz and those guys. So I mean, if you think, hey, if we got rid of the whole Garrett Bischoff thing and we could put those guys in, and I'm not the biggest fan of AJ or any of those guys in the Brown Blazer.
Yeah, no.
But, there's guys that aren't on the show that haven't been on the show for a while now, besides the Biff comeback. I said no Mr. Kennedy. He's busy selling T-shirts. No RVD, no Scott Steiner, no Devon, which England's been waiting, you know, just clamoring for. I guess maybe a 7, because the matches were really good. If you take the women's match out, the other three were really good. Eric Young thing, take it or leave it. You're going to get it every week. And the whole Brandon Jacobs thing, kind of dumb. And the MMA host, why is he on my TV? But I'd
terrible.
Say 6.5 or 7. Yeah.
Okay. Scott Steiner needs to be on my TV set every week cutting a promo. They need to give him an interview segment. That would be fun. And I think the Pope should be used more. He can really talk, and he has some upside potential too, but he's been Casper for the last month or so. Those are guys I'd much rather see them use TV time on than Hogan and the Bischoffs, but I guess I don't know what draws money, dude. So.
Yeah, I forgot all about the Pope. What was it, like 2 years ago? He was the number one contender. He won one of their awful tournaments, but he was like the next guy in line, and then he got an injury, and then they shelved him, and he's been mediocre or, you know, pretty much awful ever since. I don't know. I thought he was going to be the next big thing when he was on ECW. Well, actually, before they sent him to ECW, when he was talking for the Man Bear for about 2 months.
He really stood out around that time period and was very good in OVW during those days, and deserves better, quite frankly, than what they're giving him. I'm not saying he's a main event guy or anything, but he's somebody you can put in the mid-card and use him, you know? Why not? So, and like I said, Scott Steiner, he needs to talk every week. He just, he calls somebody fat, calls somebody old, say Ric Flair has yellow teeth. I don't give a fuck. Just give him a microphone and let him go to town.
Can we put him in the ring with Garrett Bischoff? I need that promo.
Oh, that would be so beautiful. Oh. That would be a dream come true. That'll never happen. Oh, one other thing here. I missed this in my notes earlier. I think it's funny that Hulk Hogan is fighting against a group that was named after him. Good job, TNA.
Yeah, he created Immortal. Now he's going to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like how they still are going with the Immortal thing. I mean, I get if you don't ditch the theme music or whatever, but when they're
right.
Like, Immortal coming to the ring, and I'm like, wait, who? And then Bully Ray's not with them, and I'm like, is he still with them?
Right.
Because he was. He was at the the pay-per-view before. That was the whole thing. Abyss was going to join Immortal, and now they've moved away from that. Jeff Jarrett is annexed to India, so don't drink the
Thank
water,
God.
Jeff.
Mm-hmm. No, they pared it down to just a threesome. Bischoff, Gunner, and Flair with the drug-addled woman. So, I don't know. Very weird what they've done. And they didn't bother to rename the group after Hogan came back against them. So, very confusing there.
Yeah, what would you name a group run by Eric Bischoff?
I love each and every one of you. Touch heart. I don't know.
That's gonna be
no name.
Put that on the
just the
front and the back of the T-shirt.
The announcer has to introduce them as touch heart. You know, not saying anything, just touching your heart. So.
Yes, we need more Mike Tenay on camera acting. That's what we need.
Yep. That'd be excellent. Any other thoughts on this week's show, Matt?
No, just said I liked what they're doing with the main event program. And that it's,
yep.
I'm not counting Garrett Bischoff as a main event.
Nope.
Good to see Kurt Angle's corpse back.
Yep.
Apparently his Olympic run is ending maybe, so he can get fully focused. Hopefully somebody's driving him to the shows, so
yep.
We don't have to worry about that.
Black woman, if I had to guess.
Could be. I'm sure there'll be. We'll have a new knockout very soon. Like the show, a couple good matches. So when the main things are good. And I'll say it's good, not even on a TNA scale. It was a good show. So
yeah.
I hate when people are like, well, it's good for TNA. I'm like, so it's if it's a shitty show, call it a shitty show. But I thought it was decent if we could cut the Bischoff out.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts? Anything else you want to get off your chest before I sign off this week?
No, I guess I'm plan on heading to the Milwaukee for the Elimination Chamber tomorrow night. So
okay.
Anybody in Stunt Granny out there would like a quick post-game review, hit me up. Bringing the ratings, I'll help in any way I can. But that's it. Rooting for Santino, Cobra running wild tomorrow night.
Well, I'm going to completely ignore that and say four. My co-host, Matt Fanatic, for the Zima Ions Hairspray, and for the rest of TNA Impact for this week, I am Dusty Giebing. This is Vince. I'm Granny TNA Audio, and we will try to do better next time.